Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at deloitte.com/us/engineeringadvantage.
Support for Pivot comes from ServiceNow. By now, you've probably heard about AI. You might even be sick of hearing about it. But despite all the hype, it's not always clear how AI can help your business. ServiceNow has some ideas. With their intelligent platform, they can put AI to work across your company, improving customer experiences, helping non-coders code, accelerating your IT team's productivity, and resolving HR cases faster. So work can actually work better for everyone. So stop the hype and start putting AI to work. Go to servicenow.com/genAI to see why the world works with ServiceNow.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And I'm Scott Galloway.
So, Scott, so much happened this week, and we don't have weekends off anymore. This weekend, of course, Trump tweeted a video of his supporters in Florida.
What a shocker, they were in Florida?
Well, they're this group of elderly people in the villages, and they were driving golf carts. But one of the people audibly yelled, "White power," which the president left up for quite a long time and then took it down under probably duress, I'm guessing. He took it down, and they used the excuse that he didn't hear it, even though it's like the first thing this man says as he's driving his golf cart. So he's essentially a Klansman in a golf cart. Klan cart. I don't know. It was weird. And then, of course, it was used as a distraction for what was going on with these Russians paying for the Taliban for killing American soldiers, which is some intelligence that many people have reported this weekend. So someone at the Lincoln Project, which like knocks off these videos about things like these with incredible pace, which they did pretty quickly, said he was using racism to cover up his traitorous act. So it was kind of a fascinating weekend. It's just it never ends. And then he went golfing with Lindsey Graham. So this is just amazing, the pace at which he's trying to violate these social media platforms, violate rules on them, is really quite amazing. What do you think is going on? Except for pure rank craziness, what do you think is happening?
Well, I was going to ask you, because I think you're just more in touch with media strategies than I am. Do you really think he thought, or they thought, all right, bounties on American soldiers paid by Russians that we knew about and did nothing about. So we've decided that our political gains are more important to us than the well-being and physical safety of our men in uniform, who I can call and put in harm's way in about 3 minutes, who put their lives on the line. And for me, the commander-in-chief in our country. Do you really think, and I'm asking this sincerely, do you think that they said, okay, this is so bad that we actually have to decide to be outrageously racist to keep people, to distract people? You think that's an actual strategy?
I think they do it all the time. They do it literally. It's like clockwork. Anytime there's a massive like a story that's not even an interesting story, a terrible story for them, like really, truly, they mask it with something else. I mean, it's just, I wouldn't say this in normal terms, but it's, you can't be this stupid for this long. And I think it's a calculated act. And then, of course, Mike Pence held a coronavirus briefing, and he suddenly puts on a mask. I mean, I think everything about this administration is about visuals and instant news cycle to keep people off of story, which is quite important, and to get to the bottom of. I don't think it's any accident he was with the head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Lindsey Graham. A person on the Judiciary Committee. I forget which one he's on, but in any case, I think it's really calculated. Everything they do now is you can't mistake calculation for, and to own the news cycle. Given the others now, the other side, especially like things like the Lincoln Project and these videos that are coming out in rapid fire, These videos are fascinating. There are 10 million people are watching one of them about the soldiers. There's a Medius project or something like that. There was a veterans group that I don't know who's behind that. And it's really fascinating. And they're all on Twitter. And then, you know, you have Sarah Cooper lobbing them off. It's a really interesting time for these messaging to go out one after the next. I don't know. We'll see. It's going to get more intense as we go along, but it's really interesting that the whole thing is sort of happening in real time in the way
it is. When I first heard about it, I thought, I spoke to my old boss, Dean Peter Henry from the Stern School, and he summarized it and he got me thinking. And it appears like everything they do reflects this. When I say they, I mean the administration. And that is, I think that they have decided, okay, the minority becomes the majority in 2040. There's a large contingent of our base and of white people in America that just aren't comfortable with the minority becoming the majority. And we've adopted a voter suppression strategy, and we're going to become overtly explicit that white people, we're the ones that have your back in terms of pushing back and stopping the oncoming march of those brown people. And it seems to me they are being increasingly explicit and brazen and basically saying it's us versus them, you know, crazy white people, you better get out and vote for us.
Well,
it just strikes
working.
Me as just incredible. It just like, I would have thought this was something out of the 50s or the 60s,
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah.
But they're just not, it doesn't feel as if they're even trying to hide it anymore.
Yeah. Well, I'll just say, if that's your grandpa in that cart, you better go get him in Florida. That's all I have to say. Seriously, I'm bringing my mother back from Florida, and she's being like recalcitrant to go into quarantine. It's crazy. And of course, that leads into the Fox News report that was out, that Fox News, a lot of people wrote about over the weekend, was, as I had written many months ago, is people with that has suffer more higher levels of coronavirus watch Fox News and specifically different programs. Anyway, it's a really interesting time. I think not just online, but this onslaught of instant media stuff really does have an impact on people in a way that's already underlying problems with racism and sexism, et cetera. But it really does sort of amp the volume to 103. Speaking of which, we're going to go on to big stories.
Well, hold on first.
Okay,
I have
right,
a little surprise
right,
for you.
You're, all right.
I've, you know, I really don't like to read your work, but your New York Times opinion piece this week
which
was
one?
Less bad than usual.
Ah,
so I just want to read.
Right.
I just want to read about that.
Oh, you secretly admire me.
Speaking about Alex Kern's suicide and Robin Hood's role in it. Mm-hmm. The tragedy got a lot of attention, especially after Forbes reported that Mr. Kearns left a note behind asking, how was a 20-year-old with no income able to get assigned almost $1 million of leverage? How indeed? Embedded in the query is a much bigger one that has been plaguing the tech industry and its innovative entrepreneurs for far too long. What is the reason for their persistent tendency to ignore the potentially dangerous impact of their creations? These days, the companies can seem not just careless, but also predatory. Is it to make more money? Is it because growth trumps safety? Is it rank sloppiness, lack of foresight, a design flaw that could have, and more to the point, should have been anticipated? A laser focus on innovation? All of the above. Perhaps the reason hardly matters since, as Robert Louis Stevenson wrote, everybody sooner or later sits down at a banquet of consequences, and that is the ashen meal now in front of Robin Hood's co-founders and co-chief executives, Vlad Tenev and Baiju Bhatt. Ashen meal.
Ashen.
I don't even know what that means.
It sounds good, though, doesn't it?
I know. I know
doesn't
what it means, but I don't know what it means. I know what it means, but I don't. And the next time I see you, I'm going to hug and kiss you, and you're going to not like it, but you're going to like it.
No, I'm not going to like it. There's no way.
Ashen meal.
I know.
An ashen meal. Where did you get that?
Pulitzers all around.
Oh, my God. It's raining Pulitzers.
It's raining Pulitzers. I thank you for reading
it. An ashen meal.
Thank you. It works perfectly with the banquet.
Oh, you are good. You are good, my friend.
Do you like the quote?
Stay thirsty.
I know.
That was very good. An ashen meal.
I did that for you. I did that for you. Because you cried and you made me not cry, but you made me think about it.
I'm crying every 48 hours.
That was an interesting thing to report. And I talked to his cousin-in-law, and I also talked to the company, to Vlad Tenev, which was good. It was a good situation. We'll see what they do. But my whole point, it leads into
our. You know what they've done so far?
What?
Well, they've given $250,000 and they've agreed to hire an option specialist.
I know, that's not enough. I know. They're
taking this very seriously.
Although I did get calls from their board of directors who said that they appreciated it, some of them.
Yeah, they appreciate it and they're all busted up about it, right?
No, they're really upset. I know, but you know what? The only way we can do is write things like Ash and Meal and see where it goes.
Ash and Meal.
In any case,
and not forget, just Robinhood. FYI, I say we just mention Robinhood every week until they do something. I think that's what we can do.
We can do that. That sounds good to me. But let's get to big stories. So this is on point. After escalating pressure from companies and Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway, Facebook says it will start mostly Kara Swisher will start labeling political speech that violates their rules on the platform. The move came late last week as the company Unilever said it would be halting ads on Facebook for at least the rest of the year because of hate speech. In a live stream aired last Friday, Zuckerberg said he was, quote, optimistic that we can make progress on public health and racial justice while maintaining our democratic traditions around free expression and voting. He then denied that the move change in policy has anything to do with an ad boycott or revenue, which is a lie, but Facebook shares fell about 8%. I mean, then there was Coca-Cola, who was going to remove social media advertising, did not join the boycott, but, you know, sort of join the boycott. And there's other companies considering it. A Starbucks, same thing. Social media, not this specific thing, which is this Stop the Hate boycott that's been going on, that's been organized by a bunch of different people like Color of Change and NAACP and the ADL. And also Sleeping Giants has been a big part of it. And Common Sense Media. There's a whole bunch of a coalition, and they're taking the whole thing global. So Scott, what, you know, it looks like there's some movement here. Maybe not. Maybe they're just, you know, placating people, but it is having some effect. And I think it's a good sign, at least for now.
Well, I was doing some research this morning, and Nick Clegg, Facebook's vice president of global affairs and communications, conceded Sunday on CNN that people want to put pressure on Facebook to do more. That's why we made those additional announcements on Friday. That's why we'll continue to redouble our efforts, because, you know, we have zero tolerance approach to hate speech. Yeah, they have zero tolerance for hate. That's like saying I have zero tolerance for Zacapa and Chipotle. I run on rum and burrito bowls. That is just so ridiculous. And you know what, Kara?
Yeah.
What? This is, I hate to say it, I think this in the long run is probably a bad thing, because they are going to do things that Twitter has already done. They said, okay, we're going to label political speech. They're not saying they're going to start the stop taking political ads. So they're going to move to not even where Twitter has moved.
Right.
They'll declare victory. Their advertisers will all, you know, pat themselves on the back, the ones that were accounted for, I think it's like 0.01% of their revenue, and we'll be under the impression that Facebook is less of a menace.
Oh, we won't, because guess why?
Because we're serving them an ashen meal.
We're going to serve them many ashen meals until they get the point. This is ridiculous. I mean, I agree with you. I think, first of all, look, it's better than nothing, and it's there's significant advertisers, and I do think they're you know, the small advertisers, I talked to a relatively small advertiser, and they said, you know, I have to spend more on there. I'm going to spend more on that service. You know, I hate them. Again, another one that's, it's not small, but it's not big. And so I think as long as it delivers for them, they'll continue to get those. It's the only game in town. It really is. It's like Google and search and things like that. And so I do think that that is in their favor, but at the same time, the tarnish continues. And I think we have to continue to keep up pressure on them to do the right thing. I mean, of course, they'll do the smallest amount they want and wrap themselves in the First Amendment like they tend to do. But what I think is going to happen is that they're going to be pressured by employees. They're going to be pressured from the government next. And so it will continue. It will be sort of a drumbeat. I don't think this is going away for them by any stretch, these advertisers, you know, Unilever is a really interesting company. YouTube's been boycotted by major brands. I don't know if you saw over the weekend the two Jenna Marbles and Dawson, who is, you know, he did blackface. He was masturbating around Jada Pinkett Smith and Will Smith's daughter, like making a joke about it. you know, which they, I wouldn't get them mad. And he did get them mad. They were on Twitter sort of saying, we're going to probably, you aren't going to do well in going forward. It was a nice way of saying that. So, you know, he apologized and he's, oh, I don't know if he's going to continue on Twitter, but Jenna Marbles said, who has done a bunch of stuff like that. You know, there's people are trying really hard to dial back some of the stuff they've done. And I think you're going to get a backlash, the backlash of first, you know, you can't say what you want. And I was like, no, you can't, like, actually, in some case, or you suffer for consequences. But it's going to be an interesting time to see what happens, because these platforms have allowed people like this to do these kind of things for a very long time. And it's had an impact. And now, you know, ash and meals everywhere, I'd say.
But remember in the Terminator?
It's my favorite movie.
But the second one with, I forget his name. The guy is some sort
Edward,
of...
Edward, yeah, go ahead, yeah.
The guy has some sort of, the actual Terminator has some sort of liquid...
Oh, yeah.
...substance that if he chops off an arm, it just sort of reanimates and reforms very elegantly.
It's the metal. Mm-hmm.
The tensile base or the tensile strength, the diversity, it's the... Facebook's advertising base is arguably one of the most robust business ecosystems in the world. And the tools are so powerful and so many people are on it that even if they lose, if they were to lose their 50 biggest advertisers, as long as they just throw some kind of, I don't call them illusory, but sort of symbolic gestures at the problem, that arm is going to regrow really fast. The opportunity to swoop in and target those people for other brands and small business who really have depend on Facebook, it'll just regrow that arm really, really quickly. So I don't think
this
gets
us very far. You have to put them then in a very hot vat of metal, as would happen
there
to that
go.
Guy.
There you go.
But first they froze him and destroyed him, and then they were somehow in a furnace-based steel mill for some reason, and the metal reformed itself. But yeah, the most recent one was the same thing, was this continual reformation, and they came back as a woman, and then this last time it came back as another man, the last movie. But you're right, the question is, where is the damage? Like, do you see any...
The Terminator franchise is in transition? Is that what you're saying?
No, but I'm saying this is the idea, is that there's nothing to be done about these things. You think there is nothing...
I absolutely think something to be done. I think we need to break them up, and I think we need to file criminal charges against senior execs. I'm saying, let's do something that's effective.
Oh, really? I don't know about criminal charges. I do think, you know, civil charges and regulatory things are
until a senior executive at one of these firms that has levied extraordinary damage, has denied harm to our youth, has delayed and obfuscated against all sorts of damage to the democracy, until one of them, and I think this is going to happen, is arrested, and I think that's going to happen, or detained, but it's going to happen on foreign soil. I don't think any of them give a good goddamn. I think the markets have taught them to lay and obfuscate, hire super charming, high EQ, intelligent people like Nick Clegg. He strikes me as a very impressive, likable person.
It's very pleasant.
And the market will react and respond and just keep on going. I mean, it's easy to make a sociopath when you keep rewarding them for sociopathic behavior. So
I don't know.
There's stuff to be done here. I don't think it's, unfortunately, I salute Unilever. It was a leadership position. But you know what? Unilever spends $11 million on Facebook a year. They do $16 billion a quarter. And Eric was like, oh, wow, this is a big deal. Not really.
Well, okay. All right. I'm gonna go with the glass half full thing. This is the beginning of it. And I think if we continue to keep the pressure, it's not a good look, is that essentially you're a cigarette company. Like there and continually people saying this is I was gonna text the Starbucks CEO and say, why do you, can you just call them out by name? It's sort of the people that say bad things, you know, things that badly have been said and nobody calls out Trump by name, for example. I think calling out by name is really important. I do think going forward, we're going to see, I don't know. I just have a feeling, because I put up something that said, let's not give kudos to someone who did the thing they should have done in the first for doing the right thing. There's no kudos here for Facebook. And I got thousands of retweets, and I never like lots, and it was really interesting. So I don't pay attention to everything on Twitter, but I do notice what people react to. And when I said it that way,
I think you pay attention to everything on Twitter.
Well, in any case, no, I don't. But it was the reaction.
But I want to bring some nuance into the argument.
All right, okay.
You know who gets really hurt by this?
What?
You know who registers the desired impact of these very, what I'll call honorable, thoughtful, heart in the right place brands trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a leadership move by Unilever. Yeah. It was a leadership move. It was bold. It's usually, I love Unilever. I love P&G. I've worked with both of them. The people who run the companies are these really thoughtful, kind of civic-minded people. So congratulations to Unilever. I mean that. But you know who's going to register the impact of their actions?
Who?
Twitter.
Yeah.
Because if you'll notice, every brand and every company that's decided we're going to remove our advertising from hate platforms is lumping Twitter into it.
Yeah.
Even though Twitter was the one to ban all political advertising, and the moves that Facebook has said they're going to make in response to this isn't even as much as Twitter has done. And by the way, Twitter can't absorb these body blows. Twitter is not the Terminator.
And therefore, subscriptions, like you say.
Twitter, this is the thing. The real damage to the business, the real
Snapchat
gut punch
was in there too.
Is going to be registered by Twitter and potentially Snap, who are being lumped into this entire anti.
They should not be lumped.
Well, I mean, I think the way people look at Twitter, unfortunately, is all of the hate with none of the scale. And Twitter, if Twitter doesn't figure out a way to disarticulate themselves from other social media platforms, as Tim Cook did from other big tech companies, They're going to get all of the boycotts, and it's not a monopoly. It's not part of the duopoly. So the company that really got hurt by Unilever in this campaign is Twitter. It's not Facebook.
All right, I agree with you. I agree with you. We're going to take a quick break and come back to talk about Amazon buying a self-driving car startup that actually I know very well, and a friend of Pivot to discuss H-1B visas.
Support for Pivot comes from the Optimistic Outlook podcast. What can a microgrid on Chicago's South Side teach us about the future of energy? How can we fight to make clean air a basic human right? And why are there almost a million open manufacturing jobs right now? There's only a few people in the world with the expertise, access, and perspective to give real answers to those questions. And Barbara Humpton, the CEO of Siemens USA, is one of them. On her podcast, The Optimistic Outlook, you get a seat at the table with Barbara as she shares the latest insights on breakthroughs in manufacturing technologies that are reshaping our reality. Barbara's guests include thought leaders, industry mavericks, and researchers who all share actionable information and ideas about the technologies that are creating our future. Recent episodes highlight how new technology paired with sustainability efforts has radically changed workplaces across the spectrum, from hospitals and energy plants to transportation systems. Other fascinating topics include sustainable beer brewing, the power of 3D printing, and the incredible potential of self-healing concrete. To learn more, join the dozens and dozens of people who tune into this podcast. Listen to The Optimistic Outlook wherever you consume your podcasts. Support for Pivot comes from Fundrise. You know the adage, buy low, sell high. It's easy to say and hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise flagship fund to your portfolio in just minutes with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/pivot. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise flagship fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
Okay, Scott, we're back. Amazon is at it again. They're buying the autonomous ride-hailing company Zoox as part of a push to move into driverless taxis, although I will tell you, I know a lot about this company. The sale was rumored to be around $1.2 billion, which is just a scooch above what they've raised. So they were obviously
Amazon got a bargain here. It would put Amazon in competition with companies like Uber and Lyft, give Amazon yet another revenue stream. Google and Tesla are both experimenting with driverless car technology. This is, you know, Amazon, I was waiting to get into this space. This is a really interesting company. And it's an interesting move because I have seen these cars and they aren't out in the wild yet, the new cars that they're mm-hmm. doing, which are these sort of Lego-like cars that you put together and fix in this way. They feel like delivery vehicles. They actually look like coaches. I wasn't able to take pictures of them or anything else, but I did ride in one, and it was a really interesting experience. And anyway, they're really kind of nifty cars, and it's a nifty technology. Zoox has been funded by some really interesting entrepreneurs. At the same time, it was the CEO was a person of color, a woman of color, who had worked at a bunch of different companies. I think Intel was where she was a pretty significant executive there. It's a really interesting company, and it's a really interesting purchase because it's pretty cool, the stuff they're doing at Zoox. So what do you think of this? Why do you think they did this?
I was going to ask you that because I wonder if, people immediately lump it in with Uber
and
Tesla, but my sense is the person in the back seat is going to be paper towels and espresso pods.
Yeah,
do you think they're? Yeah. My sense is it's more about delivery and fulfillment than it is about autonomous taxis.
Well, it's interesting. These cars, as you look at them, they go backwards and forwards, which is interesting.
That's what cars do, Kara.
No. But they drive. They don't have to turn around.
They go back. They go forward.
No, but they don't have to turn around. There's no.
They run over your cat. They do emissions into the air. Boom! America's auto industry.
They are very much like delivery vehicles. They're very.
And they get the ladies if you get the right wheels.
This is not a ladies car. Anyway, it's a square coach-like kind of thing. And it's you know, the doors open automatically. You could see it being full of stuff. And then when something breaks down, you can pull the one unit off of the car and fix it. It's really an interesting car. It literally looks like a coach. I don't know what else to say.
But why do you think Amazon purchased it? What do you think?
I think delivery. I do. I think it's a delivery move. I think you could get into taxis at the same time. What they have is these individual areas that people can get in without talking to other people. So it would be a group, you know, it's a lot of carpooling kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really interesting company, and it's the first. You know, it's the people behind it have worked at Google and other places on these things. And I think one of the big investors was from Australia, Atlassian. I just thought it was a really smart move. This
Atlassian,
company,
one of the most important companies you never hear
yeah.
about. You know why? Also, I think they acquired this company
because
Jeff Bezos hates Elon Musk.
Oh yeah, well, that Elon Musk tweeted about it, which
was
of course.
It's really interesting. They both see them as like, okay,
yeah,
I
agreed.
Get to go into space, I'm God, and then they've been going back and forth about their different space efforts. And
right.
then what do you know, Jeff Bezos ordered the first 100,000 vehicles from Nikola, the Tesla competitor. Is it called Nikola?
Yeah.
What's it called? That wasn't by accident.
Yeah.
These guys hate each other. So I'm wondering if Bezos senses that Tesla might be getting somewhere in autonomous driving. Like, I know.
Yeah.
I think I'll show up and shoot an op-on.
Yeah. And this is a very promising company, too, in this space. So it's a really, it is an interesting time. And I agree with you. The Musk thing was, he called Bezos a copycat. And I was like, too bad. That's exactly what he is. So what? Like,
yeah.
It was funny. It was
That's
a very
the best business strategy. Second mouse gets the cheese in today's economy.
Exactly. And one of the things that was interesting is I wonder if he's going to like buy a tunneling company. That I was like, where is
That'd
this tunneling?
Great.
I know.
That'd be great. I would love that. I've started a. Oh my gosh, that would be awesome.
I know. You know what's really fascinating about these guys? I always.
Other than their money, nothing.
You know,
absolutely
they do.
Nothing.
They don't like each other all individually. It's a real, and they're very aware of each other. I remember Mark Zuckerberg.
A bunch of powerful males in the same room who don't get along. A shocker!
But they're very.
What
concerned.
A shocker!
They're very concerned. When I was last time I saw Mark Zuckerberg, he was asking about Elon Musk. Like, is he crazy kind of thing? And he was trying to be polite about it, but that's essentially what he was asking me. I think it was during that whole SEC thing and the 420. And same thing with Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. I got to tell you, you know, they were more Bill Gates than Steve Jobs because he could care less about anybody. Like he was the top dog essentially.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If they start a boy band with Evan Spiegel, it's so obvious that Evan will be the lead. And I don't think either of them will recover from that. I just think both of them are just so freaked out that they're supposed to be the sullen, interesting ones that get a heroin addict in the boy band.
We're moving some books as usual with you. And I think we're going to move on. Let's move on to a friend, although Evan is certainly dreaming. Let's move on.
I can see her. She's smiling at my jokes. I like her already.
All right. Listen to me. Your hair picture, we're going to discuss that later, that you put on the internet, which was disturbing.
You're a little hot for daddy. Be honest.
No, not even slightly. What is less than slightly?
Drink lemonade, the dog.
I still couldn't get sex back then.
Can you imagine what it's like now? I was handsome and I couldn't get any action back then, Kara.
Okay. All right. If you say so. All right. Listen, we're moving on to a serious topic.
I broke the internet with my picture of hair. I broke the internet.
You didn't. I had more tweets about, I don't know.
Your ashen meal?
The Nazi people in golf carts. In any case.
That's hard to beat. Nazi cart is hard to beat.
Will you let me move on? We're moving on to a friend. She's waiting for us.
I'm caffeinated.
As we discussed briefly on last week's show, Trump has suspended H-1B visas. It will prevent highly skilled workers from working in the U.S. or certainly change things around. And a lot of Silicon Valley companies depend on the workforce. There's been sort of quiet rumbling. But to get a broader scope of this issue, which is a critically important one, immigration in this country, what means for Silicon Valley workforce and others, we have Sayu Bojani on the line. Sayu, are you there?
She's am.
All right. How you doing? Sorry to have to endure this, but she's the founder and president of New American Leaders, a coalition based in New York City that works across the country to build the power of immigrants in the U.S. So let's talk a little bit about this specifically, and then I'd love a sort of broader look of where we are. Every 27 minutes, Stephen Miller seems to pop up somewhere doing something awful. But talk to me a little bit about this, and then Scott and I have a lot of questions about what impact this has across the country.
Sure. I mean, look, the thing is, like you said, every 27 minutes, there's some panic attack that's directed at immigrants and that kind of fans the flame of his base. So I connect H-1B decision to asylum seekers, to DACA recipients. It's all in the last couple of weeks, all a way of deflecting blame from the administration's poor handling of the coronavirus and the economy more broadly, right? So, I mean, immediately, I think for people who have H-1B visas, it's created a great deal of uncertainty about their future. Mm-hmm. I do think that has an immediate impact on productivity. I think it has obviously an immediate impact on how companies are thinking about their workforce. But I also want to just say more broadly that any immigration decision and announcement, regardless of whether it affects you as an individual immigrant, it creates a kind of both uncertainty and fear. And so this is very much part of his strategy and has been for the years that he's been in office.
So when you're talking about this, why now? Why this right now? Now, I know what was interesting is when I was tweeting about it, and I don't think Twitter is the reaction of everything, but it's set off an incredible debate. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people arguing with each other after I did one tweet about whether this is a good program, whether reform is needed here, whether the way it's done sort of keeps workers tethered to one company, that there's not enough going on. And then there was a whole group talking about why don't companies invest in training in this country. How do you look at the whole, does it have any traction, the idea of reforming this or changing it in any way?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think it's a both and. I think it's keeping our borders and doors open so that we can continue to attract. I mean, it starts with international students as well. Like I had an F-1 visa as an international student. And the first visa I got after that was an H-1B. And it wasn't in the tech sector. It was in publishing. That was 35 years ago. At the time, your H-1B was tied to your employer. That's something that I believe has changed. But at the end of the day, you know, the thing that we don't understand is how uncertain you always feel in this country if you are constantly made to feel other. And I mentioned this psychological impact because who we are as people shows up in who we are in our jobs. Mm-hmm. And so to sort of take immigration as just, this is the policy, without looking at the bigger picture of our society, I think is very problematic. And we've done that over and over. So just to your question, one last point I'll make is that, yes, I absolutely think it has to be looked at more holistically. I think we have the need for H-1B visas has always exceeded the actual numbers. We always run out of H-1B visas very quickly. And yes, ostensibly, you can change employers right now, but that's not something that you can do very easily, you know? And I think people just don't understand how it's like the line, you know, people always talk about the get in line. There is no line. I mean, and so nothing about immigration in this country is simple. And we really design it to be complicated, bureaucratic, and psychologically disturbing, frankly.
Sayu, it feels as if we could have, so we're supposed to, at NYU in the fall, we're supposed to, 28% of our students are international students. And I wonder if this mix of xenophobia, H-1B visas being revisited, and quite frankly, COVID-19 means that we will have, you know, 0% of our students international. Could we? And they typically come here, they fall in love with America, they stay, they go on to be incredibly productive citizens, including the CEOs of some of the most impressive tech companies. Are we in risk of having kind of a lost generation of innovation and productivity that starts with just this dramatic? It's as if we're not planting seeds around innovation. It's as if we decided we're just not going to plant any crops. And has the administration done a calculated strategy here where they would rather have this racist whistle call, but the people who are going to pay for this is our economy in 5, 10, 20 years? Have you guys done any analysis around what happens when you have a decline in immigration?
Well, so yes, except for we haven't done analysis on overall impact on certain sectors. But we do know that around the country, there are so many towns that have been revitalized by the presence of immigrants, right? And, those are not necessarily the tech workers. But look, I mean, people fall in love with America before they even get here, which is why they come.
Yeah.
And I have that personal story, and then I'm that person who stayed, and I become a CEO of a tech company, but I became a startup leader in the nonprofit industry. I've started 2 nonprofits. Those have created jobs. Those have helped to build social fabric. And so I do think that we are sending messages that are going to hurt the number of people who come here. I want to emphasize that America continues to be a beacon. Like, there is something very exciting to people about coming here. And I also want to emphasize that the journey has always been hard. I mean, yes, there's no question that this president and his policies are deeply, deeply damaging. But we've always had difficulty being in this country. And so I don't want to, we are unified in our enemy right now. But I think one of the things that folks in your industry can do, and really everywhere, is to understand those connections, right? Understand, just like in the Black Lives Matter movement, Black lives have always been at risk, not just in the last year when we've, or 10 years or 5 years. And so how do we understand what it feels like for someone like me? Every single time I left the country, I had to go to the international student office and get papers signed and then go through a questioning process when I returned to this country. And still, I stayed. So the kind of person who continues to commit semester after semester, year after year, to staying in this country and contributing to this country is a kind of person we should be throwing our doors open to.
So just a follow-up question to that. I wonder if we need to reframe the way we position immigration. I think that as Americans, we're pretty narcissistic. It seems like we frame immigration, the notion that it's the right thing to do. It's a nice thing to do. We have a history of welcoming immigrants. Well, don't we need to reframe it as our economy runs on several things, including attracting the best and brightest? This selfishly is a smart thing to do. And I agree with you, we're still a beacon, but it feels to me like Canada and Australia are starting to out-beacon us. At some point, the best and brightest who want to leave other nations that don't offer the same opportunity start going to other democracies with strong economies, including Canada and Australia. Don't we need to reframe it as, this is just going to be really distinct of the moral argument, distinct of our history, distinct of our legacy. It's just economically stupid. Have you seen a Is there a relative uptick in immigration to places like Canada and Australia?
I'm not familiar with the specific data about Canada and Australia. I will say that I think you're right in thinking that we need to frame it more broadly, right? Like anything, there's no such thing as a single issue around immigration. And there are two ways that we can frame it more broadly. One is that the advocates for immigration have always sort of separated along several lines, right? So there's the H-1B advocates, there's those who are advocating for the undocumented worker, undocumented folks who are here, and then there's those who have the family reunification argument. And often those make, they don't even make strange, they make strange bedfellows, but they never come together. And so I think we need a more holistic, and this is, I think, what Kara was referring to earlier, like we need a more holistic conversation about immigration itself. And then I think it needs to be more holistic around the things that you're talking about, Scott, around what does it mean for the kind of economy and society we're going to have, because the innovation comes out not just in tech, but in art. I like to make a plug for the nonprofit industry and all the other industries where having these
agriculture,
folks,
hospitality.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
yeah. All of that. So
education.
Education, absolutely education. So do you expect companies to then out, because they do not have training programs in place. They've been using the H-1B visa program quite a bit in Silicon Valley, at least, and other places. But in this sort of remote moment, at the beginning, I remember a lot of tech companies saying to me, we've got to keep our people in their place globally, like in their offices where they are. And they didn't stop hiring. It was just they would keep people in place where they were or where they got stuck or something else. And they were all scrambling at the very beginning when when Trump did the Muslim ban. Does it just change permanently? Just the way, like the way work from home is probably going to change our workforce permanently?
I mean, this is a concern, right? The concern is that if we aren't able to attract people here, then it's going to backfire on the administration and frankly on many of our leaders who don't want to see jobs go overseas, right? But if I don't have a choice as a tech company to hire someone here, then my options are going to be to hire folks overseas. And that's not really going to do anything for the social fabric of our country, right? There's the economic impact, but there's what kind of town and community do you want to live in? And is this a town and community that cares for each other and that participates in our democracy? And this is why I just keep saying, like, it's economy. And yes, we can get folks to do the work wherever they are. But then what does that mean for the kind of company culture and community culture that we want to create? I think it's not a place that I think is, to our point earlier, it's not going to attract, young people. It's not going to attract the kind of diverse energy that we do see in towns.
Mm-hmm. So I have a last question. So what do you imagine that's going to happen here? Is this just going to be Trump loses and then things change? Or what do you, and then again, people don't want to get near the immigration issue in any cogent way.
It doesn't matter, right? I mean, I think our Democratic presidents have really been, there is a reason we are here. Mm-hmm. And it's because we didn't address immigration reform. So I think that what we all need to do is to invest much more in our democratic institutions and to pay really close attention to who is making policy, who those people look like, what their lived experience is, what their understanding of immigration is, and then what kind of culture we want to bring. So much in the same way that some voters who are quote unquote pro-life voted as that single issue for Trump without seeing what he represented for people who look like me. Much in that way, I think we have to shift to not just seeing what is our bottom line and what is the immigration policy, but what is the kind of country that folks are going to pick. So if Biden wins, I think there's still a long journey to get to a kind of immigration policy that welcomes all of us and that understands the connection between the economy and democracy and culture.
Sarah, I just have one follow-up, and that is, I agree with you around some of the long-term investments and change in viewpoint we need to make, but say you're the son of immigrants who every day wakes up and thinks, I'm so blessed largely because America embraced this warm hand to his parents who were immigrants. What could I do tomorrow to ensure that, you know, the bridge or the ladder behind me isn't taken away, that it remains open? What can someone do tomorrow to recognize or acknowledge how blessed they are that America used to welcome immigrants?
I mean, being someone who's sort of in that position, I don't know if I would say that we were completely blessed, because I think it is a two-way street. So I just would suggest that we reframe that as, you know, the opportunities that we've been given here are opportunities that many others can benefit from. I think getting involved in our civic processes is really important. I think a lot of immigrants do come here thinking mostly about their economic survival, and that expanding our engagement beyond our economic survival to democracy is really important. I think that the other thing that we can do is be more honest about our experience, frankly, that it's not just a, you know, the road is paved with gold dust. It's a struggle. Mm-hmm. And so those two
gold
things,
dust,
I think, being more honest. Being honest about our experience and getting involved in democracy are two really important contributions that I think we can make.
All right. This was super helpful. I was interjecting, was gold dust was a long, long time ago, I think, for this country in terms of, if ever, with immigrants.
Yeah, agreed.
In any case, this is Sayu Bojani. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. She is the founder and president of New American Leaders. Check it out, a coalition based in New York City that works across the country to build the power of immigrants in the U.S. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your good work, Sayu.
Take care.
All right, Scott, one more quick break. We'll be back for wins and fails.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Okay, Scott, we're back. Wins and fails. So many, wins. What wins do you have this week? Let me ask you about something. The Gap and Kanye West struck a 10-year apparel deal. Scott, you had predicted the Gap would go under in a time of COVID. Is this a smart move for them to stay relevant? I mean, I tried it out on my kids and they laughed. They laughed. They thought it was not. They like Kanye West too. They listened to him. But it did not attract them to the Gap, I can tell you that.
Well, stock was up 18% on the move.
I know. So what do you think?
I think it's interesting to, you know, your kids are a much better arbiter of whether it's going to work or not, but I thought it was genius. And, you know, and he's reached out to this interesting African designer to help with the collection. I think it's a kind of bold, interesting move that Gap needs to be making. And they also needed to divert attention from the fact that they're being sued by their biggest landlord for non-payment of rent. If the gap were to go under, and it doesn't look like it's going to now, that would really send a chill through the entire retail ecosystem, because it's just such an iconic, It'd be like if Starbucks went away. It's such an iconic retail.
By the way, Starbucks is cutting back. These retail locations. It's an interesting move. I do think I thought more of it. And my kid, it was interesting that my kids' reaction, because they were wearing, one of my kids was wearing Le Cordier Yeezy shoes or whatever. I think the question is,
Adidas is hot.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I was sort of like, would you buy those clothes? And they were like, no. Like, I think it was the Gap more than Kanye West than anything else. So, you know, I think that was the issue. I don't think they've been in a Gap since they were kids when we dressed them in Gap clothes then. Mm-hmm. And so it was, it just wasn't, they don't even think of retail this way. They think of it entirely around cool brands, like not around retailers for sure.
But when you're talking about the Gap, what's interesting, you're really talking about Old Navy. Old Navy's been the growth engine there. They were even thinking about spinning Old Navy at one point.
Yeah.
But it's their ground zero for the disruption from fast fashion, from COVID, from a real estate-based strategy. The Gap has really been in structural decline for probably a good decade and a half.
Absolutely. I'm trying to think. The only stores they actually go into would be Nike and Adidas, which is interesting.
Really?
Yeah. And the ones that are, you know, like Tyler, the Creator, had a store, and then
Supreme.
Supreme continues to be.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to go away, but my son wears a lot of suits. Anyway, it's just interesting how they purchase. All right, what is your wins and fails? I was just going to ask because I was curious about.
Sure. So my win is I stumbled on this wonderful movie by accident called Jojo Rabbit with Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
And Sam Rockwell, is that his name? And
yes.
I'll watch anything that's about World War II. And I was not expecting this film. It's just a visual feast. The design, the dialogue, it's a satire of World War II, German.
Yeah, it's Hitler.
World War II.
He plays Hitler, right?
But it's also, you know what it really is? It's a very moving film. And what I took away from it, it's about the relationship between a mother who's raising her son alone. And it just happens to be in World War II. And it's such a moving film. And there's this wonderful quote at the end that I wrote down and I've been thinking about a lot. And I think it's relevant in the current time we are. And the quote is the following. It's the last scene in the movie. They put up this quote, "Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror, just keep going. No feeling is final." And it's Rainer Maria Rilke. And I just love that. And this movie, anyways, my win is Jojo Rabbit.
What a
really moving piece of art. So I don't know. Have you seen it, Kara?
I have not. I don't like funny Nazi movies, except for Mel Brooks, who, by the way, turned 94 this week. Where that was the producers, obviously, there was a musical.
Yeah, but this isn't.
I know.
This isn't using Nazis as humor. I watch the stuff you recommend because I get a lot out of it, and you have great taste. But watch this.
I was watching Normal People last night.
What did you think?
Oh my God! Can you? It was like a lesbian. Like they were like lesbians. I was like, stop, like processing and not saying what you mean and stuff. I'm not speaking.
Lesbians are repressed.
It was just, it was like a lot going. I did it on your recommendation. I think
you didn't like it. I think it's.
Wonderful. I do like it. I watched. They're adorable, but I'm like, can you, like, why are you breaking up? Why are you not speaking to each other? Like,
he's got social anxiety. He struggles.
I know.
She's
he does.
Much more in touch with her feelings than he.
Sort
is.
Of, but nobody's saying. Anything. It's sort of like, right. I don't know. I feel
they're
as
17
if.
Or they're 18.
Yeah, but they're older now. They're in college. I'm like, come on, people. Like, I'm at the point where they're like, they were fine and then they weren't. I was like, what? Like,
they need our help.
I mean, I'm definitely like the processing going on with these two is exhausting. It's just sex and processing. And so I don't know what to say. I like it. I'm watching the whole thing and I'm not yet. I just recently finished Mrs. America, which I loved, because I love Kate Blanchett. Everyone in it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Bella Abzug's a character. In any case,
Phyllis Schlafly, is that right?
Schlafly, yeah. It's great. It's great. Yeah. It's really great. And great actresses all over the place. It's like Emmys all around, as far as I'm concerned. But I gotta say it was interesting to watch. All right, what's your fail? What is your fail?
Well, just going back, my fail is more advice, and I'm a shareholder of Twitter. But if Twitter doesn't take serious action across one of two dimensions, either starching their hat white and announcing they're going to get rid of the millions of bots, be more disciplined about those warning labels, kicking people off from the far left and the far right. If they don't separate if they don't get the lunar lander off this rocket that is blowing up, they're going to immolate along. They're going to self-immolate or whatever you want to call it. But they are basically the little rabbit next to the bear. The bear can survive the buckshot. The little rabbit is going to get blown to pieces. Twitter's the big loser here if they're not careful out of this advertiser boycott, because they cannot afford to lose advertisers. So if they don't immediately, pronto,
yeah, I would agree. I would
disarticulate themselves from Facebook in terms of real actions, they're going to be caught in this downdraft and they cannot survive it.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. I have talked about that. I'm actually going to write a column on this week saying there's nothing. This guy continues to have full control over this company, and it's a drop in the bucket, and they are the waited out people of all time.
I understand what you mean. Who's this guy?
Zuckerberg. Okay. I'm saying, but everybody else, you're right. Snapchat, which doesn't deserve it, it certainly doesn't deserve this. I think YouTube will be affected, but they have plenty of, plenty of ability to wait things out. Although I do think there's a commitment on that particular staff. I interviewed the guy who left and started this new search service, and I have to say
Is he going to let us invest? Conflicted?
I didn't ask. But I am getting into the beta. So I'll let you know. I'll see if you can get into the beta. You want to get in the beta?
That's it. I'm sick of you serving me ashen meals.
Would you like to get into the beta like I help you with everything else? Would you like to get into the beta?
I want to invest.
I'm not going to do that for you. I'm not helping you with that. In any case, he was very articulate about his disgust of what had been happening there. And he also was like, you can't fix this problem. So you have to start from scratch. It was really interesting. He's like, you certain things, if you put the screws too much on speech or just slow down content, you hurt people inadvertently that shouldn't be hurt. And if you put too much. Yeah, he goes, I don't know if it's fixable, so I'm starting from scratch where I don't have to make those decisions.
Subscription.
Yeah, that's what he said. And, we talked about poor people sort of being left out, and he feels as if it gets big enough, the price comes down. He says everything's subscription. You pay for almost everything good that you get in life. Anyway, it was a really interesting discussion. I think you'll like it.
Do you have a fail, Kara?
A fail? Oh, just...
Everything.
I'm not everything. No, this, I think you're right. I think that this will not matter to Facebook. And I think we have to keep this, speaking of keeping the screws to people, I think we have to continue to keep this drumbeat of other big, powerful companies have been brought to heel in certain ways. And I hate to use that term around Facebook, but this has got to continue, and advertisers can't just do this sort of like you talk about virtue signaling and then move on. This matters a great deal. And I think, unfortunately, what'll happen is if Biden wins, the pressure will be even more off them, because everyone will want to okay, everybody calm down. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that's my worry, even though Biden has indicated. And
did you see Pence on all the weekend morning shows this weekend?
What, was he wearing a mask suddenly?
Oh my gosh. I don't envy him. I forget the name of that Iraqi guy, the general. He's like, we are beating him back at the airport. He would start off with, he's so good. He doesn't listen to the question. He just talks about, first rule of politics, answer the question you want to answer. Don't answer the question. He starts off, they'd say, Mr. Vice President, we have not flattened the curve. We've extended the curve, record number of infections. And he would say, well, the success we've had is due to the great innovation coming together. He's giving these V-Day speeches.
He's just the worst.
And the people would sit there. I forget his name from CBS. He's so good. I can't remember his name. And he just, it's as if, and it's like, who's he talking about? South Korea?
Yeah, I think
he's talking about the U.S.
George Stephanopoulos. Was it George Stephanopoulos? No, he's on ABC. You know what? I think reporters are like, that's enough. Kind of thing.
This guy was going after him, and this guy is very measured. He's on CBS one, the morning show for the CBS with Margaret Brennan. He's gangster. He's really good. He was about as aggressive as you can be while recognizing and respecting the office of the vice president. But I mean, it has just gotten comical when he starts to speak. It's like, wait, are you talking about New Zealand or America? What are you talking about
here? The whole thing. He's ridiculous. He's going to go down. He's another one that's, you know, the issue is, someone was actually raising something really interesting to me, is that given the numbers and how, you know, Trump's really getting beaten like a drum right now. Listen, there's a lot of days till the election. Lots of stuff could happen. And they're trying, what they're really trying to do is, back in 2016, it was the same thing. I was like, it was not. This is, everyone's seeming to hate you. And he even said it himself on that show, that ridiculous tongue bath that Sean Hannity gave him, was the idea that, like, people don't seem to love me the way they like him. You know what I mean? Like, when he's your president, this is what's going to happen. And so what I was sort of seeing a vision of is that he would quit. You know, and he's not going to lose. He does not want to lose in a landslide. So he'd quit before it and leave, you know, Pence holding the bag, essentially, and leave him right there, which I thought was fascinating. And then come back again, sort of Teddy Roosevelt style, I guess.
I think if he did that, there's a decent chance Pence would win. I think people like Pence more.
No, they do not. I do not think they do. I think he's creepy. He's creepy. Dude, I don't think
Pence
so at all.
Creepy.
Anyway, he's creepy. Oh, come on. I didn't want to go. We're not going to have a discussion about this because he really is creepy, especially on gay issues. Gay people know this guy, and he's
electroshock therapy? You're not a fan of that?
No, I'm not. Like, let me just say, mother and father are creepy. They're a creepy pair and more dangerous in many ways. What's interesting is that he would quit, and then he might like sort of start to, I think if Biden wins, he's going to spend a lot of his time getting incoming from President Trump for a long, long time. And that's going to be, a challenge unless you just completely ignore and suck all the oxygen, but he will try to call attention to himself in massive ways forever, essentially. That'll be interesting. You know, he will not let us heal. Let's just say he will not allow us to move along and heal from his administration. So that makes, when I was sort of watching that Sean Hannity interview, I was thinking we are in for continued abuse for a long time to come, no matter what happens. So that was my
thought. What do you got on tap for the week, Kara?
Nothing. I'm going to tape my last Recode Decode today with Jim Bankoff. He's one of my final guests. And then we're going to have a best of.
Bankoff. I like Bankoff.
I know. He's going to be, I'm going to put the screws to him too. And then I'm going to work. I start on my podcast for the New York Times on Wednesday.
What's it called again?
I love Scott Galloway.
Go on. You know that works.
Give me a name.
I think you should call it discussions.
Discussions? What?
Discussions. Conversations. Discussions. Conversations. That's what you have.
No.
Oh, I know.
What? Okay.
One word. Oh my God, this is so good.
Okay, go ahead. Okay.
From the New York Times. Ashen. Boom! Jamalama ding and dong.
I will have Barbaro do it, right?
I read that word and I'm like, oh my God, I don't even know what she's saying, but I know.
You know what I was saying.
I'm just telling you. Ashen meal, Robin Hood. You're eating an ashen meal.
You just were swishered because that was like, swishered. Boom. I had one more thing they took out that I'm mad. I had one more boom in there. Yeah, editors. I let them do it because I wanted Ashen to stay. But there was one when I said that it has a bigger query, comma, his last. I had something like that in there that was really like, boom, ding. You try to do that in pieces, Scott. You try to do that. I know you try to. You just don't boom all the time, but I try to like throw it in.
Yeah, you might have a New York Times opinion, Kyle. I have a blog.
What are you doing? I'm not doing anything. My kids are with my ex or my son's with his girlfriend. Amanda's still up in Vermont, so her parents can see the baby. So I am on my own here rearranging things because I'm anal retentive.
I'm going glamping. I get a horse in Montana starting this afternoon. These are the things you do for kids. I cannot believe you
go to Montana. You do the rich people's Montana, right? You don't do actual.
Oh,
Montana.
No, it's a tent in a kerosene lantern, and I hunt my own game with a bow and arrow.
I don't see that happening. I don't see you in rich Montana, of which many bazillionaires go to Montana. correct? There's like a whole like fancy.
This is only my second time, but when
it's big sky. Wonderful. I know it's beautiful. I've been there. It's quite a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place.
I like
place.
The governor there too. Not that that is the reason why.
Yeah, I'm going nowhere. I'm going to work. I'm working. I'm going to work while you. I'm going to tape a secret pivot for us. In any case, I know we can't leave each other because we are going to be away from each other. We do not have. Just so you know, we don't have another show on Friday.
I can't quit you, Kara.
I know you can't. That's right. That's Montana, isn't that? Is that Wyoming? Where was that movie set? The Dakotas?
Brokeback Mountain?
Yeah, Montana, right?
I don't know. That was pretty hot.
Out there. That was hot. That was hot.
Those guys are hot.
You kind of look like him when you had hair, but not really.
Which one? Yeah.
Neither of them, really. They're beautiful men.
Broke the internet. Broke the internet.
Did not broke. All right, broke the internet.
Maureen Dowd likes my picture.
Oh, no, really?
My former future, whatever you call it. The next ex-Mr. Galloway.
You know what? We're bringing Maureen on. We're putting her on pivot. Do you want me to get her for next week?
I love Maureen.
She's great. She's a great. I've tried to see if she would have a socially distant drink with me, but she's not having it. She said she's been in her house the whole time. She's not moving. But she's
a gangster.
She's a gangster. But I'm going to bring her. Okay, you know what? She's coming on the show, and you two can declare your love each other.
I'm going to sign us out.
Did I bring you, Susie? Okay, sign us out.
Four more your false promises.
Okay, go catch your plane to Montana.
Four more rabbit promises. Today's show was produced by Rebecca Sinanis. Our executive producer is Erica Anderson. Our sound engineer is Fernando Finetti. Special thanks to Drew Burrows. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe, please download wherever you listen to podcasts. Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. Just keep going. No feeling is final.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until
that presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case
unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com, designed for work.